In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 154. Myself, Brian Shackman, John Senecal. On the rundown today, we'll obviously give you a little Yankees-Red Sox update. We'll talk a little bit about the MLB betting scandal. We'll talk a little bit about Tommy Pham. And now that the Birmingham Southern Cinderella story is over, we have another sort of Cinderella story that I'm into. I don't know about John. What's happening?
Oh, let's see. High school graduation is a couple days away, and the Yankees are playing good.
High school baseball is over. No state champs, sadly.
They made it to the quarterfinals and lost for the third time to the same team they lost in the
The
conference championship. No. I think he So the thing about the final game was it was lost early. So it wasn't one of those like heartbreaking losses. Right. It was one that you kind of knew was happening for about 6
You didn't get walked off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it took time. You had some time to let it set in during the game. But yeah, it's obviously it's sad that your so-called playing days are over as far as, you know, amateur and all that. He's gonna try to walk on at Fairfield. And then if not, he'll go the club baseball route. But
so I like that's different, by the way, if you listen to the podcast often enough, he was just going to go club.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to try out. So yeah. Now he's going to do fall ball and the whole drill.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that because, we never discussed this. He just kind of came out and we were sitting after the game in the evening at home. And I don't even know. We weren't even really talking much about the game. And he kind of, when I say the game, their final game. And he said, I guess I focus on summer ball and get ready to try to walk on and then not play club. And I was like, wow, that's like the first I heard him say that. So his determination is there, and it always has been there. He's very determined. He works really hard, and it's very impressive how hard he actually does work.
Baseball's the right sport for him.
Yeah, but this is the first time I actually kind of saw it, like in his eyes, that he was kind of like, you know what, screw this. Like I'm better than what's advertised, and I'm gonna try to do it. So well, there's more
one,
power to him.
I have one question then a comment. And he's notified the coach and all that crap's taken care of?
That's the next step. So
okay. He's got to let them
yep.
know.
Yeah, he doesn't just show up. I know. Yep. You know the route. It's just a matter of the next couple of weeks.
And what
that.
I would say, the reason why, first of all, I love that, because I as a parent probably would have tried to go to him with that idea. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it came from him, because the truth is like, you only get this is it.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, you're going to college, and it's not like he's going to be able to try it sophomore year after not having played.
Exactly.
He's still sort of peaking, and you never know what can happen. And so, you just go for it. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Like, now's the time.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, I just think you should be proud of him for coming to that conclusion on his own.
Yeah. I'm very proud. That's like, you know, when you have kids and you watch them grow up, little moments stick out, and it could be, you know, obviously the first steps and all that, but it's the other little moments where you kind of actually see them develop as a human being. And that was one of them where you could kind of just see it. You can feel it. So we'll see. Time will tell.
All right. So let's talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox. I think obviously the Yankees are infinitely more interesting than the Red Sox right now, but I do have a couple comments on the Sox. And my observation on the Yankees is as awesome as they've been, they're not running away with the division.
Right.
And, you know, and I don't know if Baltimore can play better, so maybe that says enough. It's sort of like the Yankees are like the way on my morning show I talk about UConn. It's like UConn, the other team that's playing UConn sometimes looks like they're playing awesome, and they're still behind by 5.
Right.
Like, so if that's the best Baltimore can do, and they're down, you know, a couple games, then maybe the Yankees are good.
Well, it's crazy when you look, and the Yankees, as we speak, are 24 games over 500, and they're only a 2.5 game lead over the Orioles.
Right.
And it's like, oh my God. And then you talk about the month of May that Judge had. And, you know, Soto's been playing out of his mind. Luis Gil's been pitching out of his mind. But when you look at the month that Judge had, and I know everyone likes to talk about it, but when I looked at it and I see His slugging percentage for the month was .918 for the month of May.
That's insane.
Now, take into account that as of like May 3rd, he was still batting under 200.
Yeah.
All right. And if you think about slugging percentage, that's like, we'll call that, that's the damage you're doing, right? That's the damage you do.
Now, slugging percentage, I mean, listen, it's average bases per at bat.
Per at bat. Yeah. So he's getting basically 9 bases per at bat is what they're saying. Elite.
No, point nine.
Yeah. Elite players are 0.6.
Yeah.
Like the overall is like Babe Ruth at like 0.68.
Yep.
Right. So that's elite. And he's, and Soto for the month was like 540 something. And that's nowadays
good.
It's great. You're a great player. You're a superstar. But to think that he had 918 is just, it just blows my mind. And then he, you know, when you're talking about like, you know, him and Babe Ruth, the only guys that have done 12 multiple doubles and multiple home runs over a certain number of games, and you start putting them in that company, it just goes to show what a great player he is.
So if they were in the Central, it'd be a 7 or 8 game lead as a midweek. If they were in the AL West,
now, that kind of scares me. That the Central has gotten so much better.
So I want to talk about, I can talk about it in a second. If it was the West, it'd be like a 14 game lead. Yeah. You know, I mean, and outside of the Phillies,
if they were in the West now, you'd have your feet up.
They'd be done. The thing about, I joked again during my morning show on WTIC 1080, I was like, yeah, finally the Guardians got rid of their manager. Like, they're doing well. Like, yeah. The Francona was terrible or something. But, I mean, I think that division is weak, and so some of the stuff is inflated. But, I mean, they have, you know, 4 teams of the 5 as of Wednesday are over .500.
Yeah, and what Cleveland's doing with a first-year manager is very impressive. And obviously he was a catcher and he's been around the league forever and everyone likes him. But still, first-year manager, and that's very impressive. And Cleveland, they just won't go away, and they're not going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, I have this huge bias. I mean, I just feel like I would love a World Series champion to come out of the Central. I think it's good for baseball. I think it's good for baseball if the Yankees win or the Dodgers win. But after that, I'd rather have a Cleveland win than a Texas.
Yeah.
If Minnesota, Detroit won a World Series, it'd be incredible. But you know, the Yankees are just so, they can just beat you so many ways. I mean, Rizzo's been like terrible. Stanton's been hot and cold, and yeah, they're still killing it. I mean, it's kind of nuts, and Volpe is becoming a star. And I think it's the best environment for him because there's so many big bats. He doesn't have to be so concerned. You know, it's just like the pressure is different with him this year even than last year. I think there's just so much less
pressure. His approach to hitting is totally different, and it's so much more fun to watch. Like, he goes,
what is the difference? Tell people.
It's just the way he's pushing the ball to the right field. He's hitting where the pitch is thrown.
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing that. He was pulling off everything. He was swinging.
He's playing old school baseball now.
He was swinging at the pitch off the plate, you know, probably obviously trying to press and impress, but he is a very impressive player.
He's
really
a professional hitter, as they say.
He's a professional hitter. And you know what? When you're going to bat leadoff for the Yankees, you got to be, because you got big shoes to fill there.
Yep, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, as it relates to the Red Sox, you know, I really resented Chris Sale a ton. I mean, I'm sure he was really hurt, but to see him, like, pitching well for Atlanta just bugs me. Having said that, you know, he did win a World Series in 2018, and when he came to Boston, he didn't pitch, but he got a really warm reception. And I think it meant something to him. It just kind of bums me out when I feel like people
gave up on him.
Well, they just make all that money and they don't end up doing a whole lot. And then they go somewhere else right after their contract, and all of a sudden they're healthy and doing well. Like, it just feels too cute to be random. But
like, he almost was like, I'm just tired of this place. I need to get out of here.
And I'm just going to stay on the injured list until I'm
going to fall off my bike.
No, I don't think he fell off his bike on purpose, but I think that, I don't think he maybe worked as hard as he could to get back. I don't know.
Right.
This is not a rational thought. It's just a feeling.
Right.
But if it feels icky that he, you know, stayed on the injury list so long, and then all of a sudden he leaves, and then he's healthy and everything's great.
Yeah. And he's got like a 3 ERA, and he's like, what, only, he's just over the mark of where like the elite players are in the league. He's one run on average under. Like, I think the average league ERA is like 4.
A really good team. And so that was nice that they gave him a good reception, but I still have such mixed feelings about him. And the only real observation on the Red Sox is, you know, last year, people forget, they were over .500 for a huge chunk of the season, and then it just, they imploded. Like, they finished the season so poorly. And you know, Matt Sorois, who produces the show, he made this point, and I think it's a good one worth mentioning, is that, you know, after the series with Atlanta, they obviously have a little respite with Chicago, but then it's Philly, New York, and even Toronto. But Philly, they got six games with Philly and New York. If you lose 4-6 or 5-6 there, all of a sudden you're in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
And I feel like in baseball, things can tailspin, you know, or what have you. So, I mean, they're going against the two best teams in baseball right now, and they're not even close. And I'm really – and so if they could even split, if they go 3-3 after going through that gauntlet, I'm going to feel a lot better about the team. But, I mean, if they get swept by both, I'm like, the season's over. You know, I mean, that's how I'm going to feel. Because if they're 5 or 6 games under 500, I don't think they can recover. If they hover around 500, maybe they can get hot late and win. Because, you know, you can be 7, 8 games over 500 and get in the playoffs. So
yeah, and remember, they're going to play – they probably with the unbalanced schedule now, they're going to play the Yankees, I believe, what, like 13 total times or something? So if they only have a 3-game series coming up, that means they got 10 more against them too. So
yeah.
And I'm sure they got another series against the Phillies. So, you know, it's not like the road's going to get any easier for them either. I'm just shocked that the Red Sox are still doing what they're doing with all the injuries. It's like I feel like every day you look and there's another injury for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, Costas and Story's out, obviously, and yeah, I mean,
O'Neill should be coming back soon. Yoshida's out, and then what's the last guy, the rookie, the right fielder, Abreu?
Abreu.
He twisted his ankle walking down the dugout steps.
Yeah, that happened just the other day.
So it's like, what's next for them? And again, like the Yankees dealt with the same thing last year. It was like one injury after another. Next thing you know, you blink, another guy.
Yeah.
This year, they're basically injury-free except for Cole, who just was on a rehab start
and
looked good. 45 pitches, 34 for strikes. So
he comes back and that heel guy's been good.
I mean, obviously, as we speak now, we haven't gotten the report on his day after recovery, and that's going to be the huge thing. How does he feel the next day? If he feels fine the next day, then
you think he'll be back before the end of June?
Well, that's a good question, Brian, because, you know, they're going to have to limit Heel's innings. There's no doubt about that. The Yankees aren't going to press
him. They got
to
slow him down.
And yeah. But you would think it would have been easier, but Clark Schmidt went down. So, you know, they got Cody Petit that came over from the Dodgers. That's going to fill in the meantime. And, you know, hopefully they don't need to tax Cole too much if and when he comes back, because they're not going to be able to do it. They'd be stupid to.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 154 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. This betting scandal, you know, I think that without talking about specifics, my view is I just want to make sure that the league – is getting the message across clearly enough to the players. You know, like to me, like that's the issue. It's like, you know, I mean, some stuff's obvious. You don't bet on your team, this and that. Like, but I mean, you shouldn't be doing it at all. But I mean, it's. I just hope that, especially with all the different, you know, and with the Latin players, I hope they're doing it in both languages. I mean, I hope the league is doing enough to make sure the players know the downside risk.
Well, everything I've read, excuse me, and heard, since this latest one happened and from the get-go with all this, they call it Rule 21 in the rule book for whatever the players, and it is beaten into their heads. It is literally beaten into their heads that this is what happens and this is what you can and can't do, and it's told in the minor leagues. It's told all the way up through.
So the message is clear in all
languages.
The message
is perfectly clear in all languages, and I think this particular incident with the Padres, I'm going to blow his name, Cucapita Marcano.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a fringe player, let's be honest. And I think it more comes down to the fact that it's more like renegade betting. You know, like, oh, well, I'll just use this one of the 82 different betting apps that we have out now how is anyone going to know? You know, right. And that's how he got caught. He got flagged by an online betting service. I don't know which one it was, but, you know, it's kind of ironic that when you go to a baseball stadium or you watch MLB Network or you watch any sort of broadcast of sports, and we'll talk about Major League Baseball, everything's brought to you by DraftKings or SportsBet or Bet360 or whatever. But you can't do it as a player. Obviously, I get it. You don't want to bet on your own team, but it just seems weird that Major League Baseball is making such a profit off their own sports betting.
Well, I don't think the alternative is to let players do it.
It just seems strange to me.
Now, of course, it's the dynamic. I mean, this is all a business, and you can't there's going to be bad actors no matter what. And it just makes – it's the same with, like, NIL crap in college. Like, there's going to be bad actors. But it's, you know
– and bad bettors, apparently. And he's got to bet all that money and didn't win anything.
I know. And then you have the Ohtani case where the guy pleads guilty and baseball's like, case closed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're like, again, Major League Baseball, they're going to do anything they can to make it disappear. The only reason this came out is because the Wall Street Journal found it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to tell you any of this stuff, just like they're not going to tell you anything about the Trevor Bauer stuff. Like, it's just they don't want to talk about that stuff.
I just don't know. I mean, there's going to be.
This will happen again for sure.
Well, no, but I wonder if they'll end up. I'm not saying I'm rooting for it, but I wonder if they'll end up a big scandal. Like, I wonder if there's ever a situation where, whether it's point shaving or something that's coordinated, but like the Black Sox kind of thing.
Right.
Like, I'm really interested to see if they're one of the sports really has a problem or is really compromised.
In regards to betting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, my feeling is it'll probably be a little bit down the spectrum of prominence. So like
there's ghost bettors for people.
Or just sports that aren't. Baseball, hockey, football,
yeah.
Or NBA. Maybe it's tennis, or maybe it's what.
It's going to happen. I mean, look, you have crooked refs, you have cork bats, you have whatever you have. Like, there's someone's always on the take.
There's going to be someone who's going to cheat the system. And so I wonder how ready the world is for a massive scandal. I'm not saying I'm rooting for it, but at the same time, like, that's the kind of news I'm here for. You know, I mean, I just feel like it'd be.
it's what makes headlines, right?
There's so much greed and there's so much money. It's amazing to me still that these athletes get paid what they get paid. And I'm not one of those guys who says, like, they don't deserve it. If I was in the position, if the radio podcasting world gave me a ton of money to do my job and I didn't deserve it, I'd still take it, yeah. So it's not like I'm judging it, but
you talk about these guys make all this money, right? And we're going to talk about UConn baseball in a second. Yeah. We were just texting on our famous text string about what the odds are for UConn to win it all.
Yeah.
And it was 10,000, basically 10,000 to 1 or something like that, plus 10,000.
Was it plus 1,000, Matt, or was it plus 10,000? So if you bet 100?
If you bet 100, you got 10 grand.
But if it was plus 10,000, would 100 be 100 grand?
I don't know. It
was plus 10,000. They were huge long shots.
Huge long shot. But the point I want to make is kind of what you touched on is if I'm a Major League Baseball player or anybody that's got good money, right? You could be a signing bonus guy or whatever. You got all this money laying around.
Yeah.
Right?
Than you need.
You got $10 million of discretionary income just laying around.
Right.
And you're going to get bored.
Right.
And if you like to bet or you like to gamble and you don't have a horse track to go to and just pay cash.
What are you going to do? Yeah.
And eventually, maybe you had a few drinks one night, and next thing you know, you hit the wrong button, or you hit the button, you had a couple beers, you're done.
Yeah, and I've done that. Like, I understand that, because I remember when I had COVID, my wife's probably not listening, I was in the basement for like 3 or 4 days, and I discovered online, like, the casinos through the whatever. I mean, it could have been a rabbit hole. It turns out I didn't lose my shirt. But I got addicted,
yeah.
And it was really bad. And you end up, like, if you go $2 to $3 a bet, you do that for 6 hours for 3 days, you all of a sudden you end up betting an aggregate of like $100,000.
You're
like,
Jesus. It adds up quick.
And it's like, well, I'm only down 30. But anyway, you're totally right. But let's segue into well, you want to talk about Tommy Pham real quick? Because, I mean, I basically, the guy's jacked. He's on like 50 different teams. I remember him when he was on Tampa. I mean, he's been in a bunch of places.
Well, I think the funny thing about Tommy Pham in this.
Just let people know if they don't know the story.
In this circumstance, there was a play where White Sox were playing the Brewers. He was sent to run home and he was out by a mile.
Who's he play for?
The White Sox. Okay, and he just got signed within the last like 3 weeks. Signed super late. He's sent home by the third base coach, out by a mile. Now, you can't plow the catcher anymore. So he kind of slides. I wouldn't say he slides hard, and now the catchers really can't even block the plate anymore, so it's not like he's blocking the plate. But it was more of like he's going to do something, and it's Tommy Pham, so he just slides, and then the catcher, Wilson Contreras, is kind of jawing at him and talking smack. So the bench is clear, everyone kind of slides off to their sides, and in the post game, they interview Tommy Pham, and he talks candidly about how he trained so hard fighting in the offseason because he's prepared to F somebody up. Like, legit says that. And it's interesting because, one, you never really ever hear MLB players talk like that in post game, right. like all out threats, basically, right? And then you look at his history, and like you said, he's got a weird history. And then the specific latest one is where he smacked Jock Peterson during warmups on the warning track over a dispute over fantasy baseball league,
right.
Fantasy football.
Yeah.
So you kind of start thinking, well, this guy's definitely a loose cannon. He's definitely a loose cannon. And I wouldn't doubt for a minute that he would totally want to F somebody up.
So, is your point like you want to let him fight?
Well, this is the way I look at it. I feel like there's probably one good MLB fight every 10 years, I would think. And if I'm thinking to myself, I'm looking back, maybe the last one I can think of that was great was the Yankees Orioles in 98. Was really good where Strawberry and it Armando Benitez hit Tino Martinez in the letters in the back and it spilled into the dugout. That was like a real fight. Now, there's been some other stuff where it started and it ended quick or kind of Harper charged the mound one time and threw the helmet and missed a guy. But full on just all out kind of fights, you don't see. Now, what if he turned it like a hockey where it's a one-on-one kind of contest?
That's just not...
Or what if you're only going to get a one-game suspension? You can duke it out with the other guy.
So, like, you want a guy gets brushed back and you want to charge him out and everyone's got to stay back and let him go?
They do it in hockey. They stay back.
It sounds ridiculous.
It does sound ridiculous because baseball is an old-school sport and you've never seen it. Now, you used to see a lot of, like, hard contact stuff on the field, right? And that's all been cleaned up, real hard contact stuff in the 70s, 80s, and players just spit on each other. Exactly. We've all seen those videos, but... Baseball is a purist sport where fighting has never been a commonplace in baseball.
No.
It's been weeded out of football. It's the only thing it's left in is really hockey. I won't say rugby because all they do is fight the whole time, right?
Not really, but in real rugby is really,
it's more
very
like
violent.
Wrestling while running around.
But hockey, they've tried to get rid of it and it's actually more accepted now than ever in hockey. It's bizarre.
Why do you go to a hockey game? To see them fight. You don't go to a hockey game to watch somebody score a goal.
I do.
No, you don't.
I do.
Nobody goes to hockey to watch people score goals. You go to watch them fight.
Listen, when I go to the Wolf Pack and my son's seventh grade girlfriend, there's a fight, she starts screaming. I get it. I'm a hockey guy, so like I like hockey, but I'm
Bryce
scared.
Harper said, "Let baseball be fun again." All those years ago, and they're working on it. They're working on it. But can you imagine if you could just have a full out, all out brawl, and everyone just stood back and was like, "All right, everyone."
Maybe the bananas should start it and see how it goes.
Well, you'll find out real quick how tough some of these Major League Baseball players
are.
Well,
I mean, most of them in general, like these guys are so much. But I think ultimately your point when we talked about this before the show is that like there's so much naked machismo that nobody ever gets called on it.
Have you ever seen an MLB fight go where they ever just kept going towards each other? It's always a bunch of yelling and it just always pushes back.
Right. It's like I call it the Pedro Martinez thing because like it's easy to be tough when you know someone's going to bail you out.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and so like Pedro, forget about the Don Zimmer toss. I mean, in general, like he talked a lot of smack.
Oh yeah.
Because he knew that
there
were eight guys behind him who had his back. Right. Because I mean, Pedro's not going to beat anybody up because he's 5'9" and he's not. I actually don't think he's tough.
No.
But he knew that no one would get at him because there was all these people protecting him.
And he was so valuable. Yeah, Gretzky.
Listen, John Senecal, Brian Shackman here. Episode 154 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. So Birmingham Southern, the D3 school that shut down, they're
done.
Cinderella run is over, and it's sad because they lost in walk-off. They had won the day before in walk-off fashion. They lost in a walk-off, and it was a great story. I hope they all can transfer to places and play.
I wonder how many seniors were on that team.
But it's a great segue to UConn because one thing I learned, if you don't know about UConn baseball, it's really difficult to be good at college baseball in the Northeast. The season's shorter. It's so expensive to travel. It's hard to recruit against those other schools. And you really have to be something special or build something special to win.
And these guys actually play outside in February.
And so when we were little, University of Maine found a way to do it. And they were good. And they made the NCAA tournament with regularity. And now Jim Penders is the coach of UConn. He's figured it out. And every year, because I talked to him on my show, he actually does it. Before the NIL transfer portal, he just was great at finding underdeveloped, peaking at the right time talent. And like being in the Northeast has a ton of that because we have short seasons. So there are people who might have major D1 talent who just aren't known. Now, with the NIL and the portal, he doesn't have the same amount of money, and the portal. I always use the metaphor, if you go to UConn and play well, you think you can go to Vanderbilt, so you transfer. You go to UConn and you don't play much, you think you're better than you are, and you transfer. So, like, right. He's got to rebuild that team every bleeping year.
Yep.
And so what he did this year, Don Memorial, the Hartford Courant, is the one who wrote about it. He grabbed guys from D3 who were great, who he felt had upside, who had eligibility. And he's got eight guys on his roster who were on Division III teams a year ago. Some from storied programs like Eastern Connecticut, and he's got one kid who's 25 or 26.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
But you know what? And they didn't have a great season. Maybe it's because these D3 guys were adjusting.
They didn't win the Big East. They
won the regular season, but they didn't win the tournament.
Right.
And they had, like, I think 2 years ago they won 50. This year they won like 33 or whatever. So they had a significantly lower win total, but they eked into the tournament by strength of schedule because they play a tough non-conference. And here they are at the Super Regional. They win 2 of 3 from Florida State. They're going to the World Series for only the second time in the contemporary era.
Yeah, they got their work cut out for them. But the good thing is, and I talked about this with my boys last night, is it's always good to go into a game knowing you got another game, especially in baseball.
Right.
So they have guaranteed 2 more games to play, best 2 out of 3. So they can definitely do it. They have a very exciting team. And like baseball, if you're rolling, you're rolling. If you're on a train, you're usually the train keeps going. And once it stops, in the postseason, you hope. Baseball usually have a good cycle. You know, usually get about 7 or 8 days of 7 to 10 days of good play.
Yeah.
So
they beat ninth ranked Oklahoma, and we talked about this as well, because if you get into a Game 3 with Florida State, that's trouble for UConn, because the difference between Florida State and Oklahoma's compared to UConn, as you might guess, is depth.
Yep.
And if you got to go, and that's what happened against Oklahoma that was unbelievable, is that a guy with like an ERA over 6 pitched a gem.
Right.
And so maybe that was lightning in a bottle, or maybe that's something they could repeat. But my point is that they don't want to go 3. If they could somehow find a way to win 2 games, it'd be great.
Ride the hot streak.
But if you don't know UConn baseball, you don't know Jim Penders. You know, his brother was Tom Penders. Tom Penders was a longtime Division I basketball coach. And he has a staff at UConn. They all went to UConn, and they've been there together. They might be the longest tenured D1 coaching staff, like in total, in the country. And they're really, really good.
Yeah, and their facilities are top-notch. And it's amazing the transformation in that college in the last 5 years up there. The baseball stadium, I believe, is only a year and a half old, 2 years old.
Yeah.
And they built a new hockey arena, a new volleyball arena.
This is UConn you're talking
about. UConn campus, yeah. Yeah. And this is Gamble Pavilion, where the basketball team plays most of their games, the men and women, is like the oldest building up there.
And they're going to renovate it.
And that's the most like recognizable thing. And if you go to the campus, everything, I'll say, behind that is all the new sports stuff.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing the facilities they have up there. I was up at a game this year where they walked off and hit a home run and came back from 8-run deficit.
I don't know about the turf stuff.
The turf is, the turf comes down to cost.
I know. I just don't like the game on it.
No, I don't either. It's not as great.
Everything from the mound to the bounces.
Yeah, it's boring. It's boring. I like to see the dirt kick up. I like to see it. But we're old school, Brian. We're old school. And I talk to my son a lot about this because he gets to play on turf fields. And he doesn't like fielding on turf fields as much. He says the hops are a little bit strange. But given that fact is he would opt to play on turf more at this level because you get such crappy grass fields a lot of times. Especially in high school. So,
yeah. All right, listen, we managed to talk a lot, as always. Listen, if you want to give us feedback, we always love to hear from you. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.